I'd like you to turn this morning with me, if you would please, to Romans 11, verses 25 and through 36. Looks like we haven't got it yet. Oh, there it is. Okay, Romans 11, 25 through 36. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. For I do not desire, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own opinion, that blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. And so all Israel will be saved, as it is written, the deliverer will come out of Zion, and he will turn away ungodliness from Jacob, for this is my covenant with them, when I take away their sins. Concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but concerning the election, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. For the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. For you, as you were once disobedient to God, you have now obtained mercy through their disobedience. Even so, also have now been disobedient, that through the mercy shown you, that they may also obtain mercy. For God has committed them all to disobedience, that he might show mercy on all. Oh, the depth and the riches, both the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has become his counselor? Or who has first given to him, and it shall be repaid to him? For of him, and through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen. The age-old question that man ponders is, why are we here? And that's a good question. But to properly answer this question, we need to consider, first of all, where did we come from? This morning I'm going to begin a short series of lessons on the meaning of life. And this morning I'm going to give the first lesson entitled, Where Did You Come From? And this will get us on the road, and then eventually we're going to ask, where are you going? So anticipate those lessons in the future, and we'll do our best to deliver. First of all, to answer the question, where did we come from, we have to do so by answering why we are here. The prevalent answer today is to claim that it just happened. Life is said to evolve from a lower life form, which in turn evolved from non-life, that is, dead matter. Everything we see is merely an accident. There was no purpose or intent in what happened. Yet the world is filled with interdependent systems where multiple subunits must be in place to create the overall. Any one missing piece creates a non-working and often even a harmful unit. Now, think how many parts come together to create an eye, or an ear, for that matter. It's impossible to even imagine how we could pull together so many parts. But the fact is this: random accidents don't produce complex systems. Have you ever heard of an explosion in a junkyard? Meaning a new Rolls Royce? Well, no. An explosion in a junkyard would just mean more junk, and not a Rolls Royce or even a Volkswagen. What is interesting about this claim is that science contradicts their own claim. The law of biogenesis states that life only comes from life. It does not spontaneously rise from non-life. Now, a law means it is solidly proven and no known contradictory evidence exists. Yet, for evolution to be true, it requires this law to be broken. Like always produces always. If you have one type of a creature, you'll always get another type, or the same type of creature. Now, there are variations within species, and there are different colors and different aspects of the creature, but never a different form of life arising from another form of life. Fish always produce fish, and I'm thankful for it. Corn always produces corn. You don't get corn from soybeans. We understand that. We don't get soybeans from wheat. We all understand that. For decades, people have looked for missing links to claim that like does not always produce like. And guess what? It's never been found, nor will it ever. Now, none of this begins to address why people are different from animals. Think about this. Why is it that we have a propensity for appreciating art and music and poetry? Why are we creative and animals are not? Why do we have a sense of right and wrong when animals don't? Why do we feel guilty over doing things that are wrong, we know are wrong, even when we're not taught? I've often wondered, do animals wrestle with the question, where do we come from? I really doubt it. The Bible answer that has been given to us is very, very purposefully made. And this answer begins in Genesis 1, 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. There you have the answer to the beginning. Genesis 1 and verses 11 and 12, God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, the fruit that yields, or the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. Notice, God saw that everything he created was good. It did not gradually get to good. It was created good. Created good. In Genesis 1 and verse 26, we find God saying, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Notice, man was God's creation. And we see that life came up. I have a passage in here too quickly. Life came about by design. I want you to look at Genesis 1, 29 through 31 to get the full context of this. God said, see, I have made every herb that yields seed which on the face of the earth, every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you shall it be for food. And to every beast of the earth, every bird of the air, and everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. Then God saw that everything he had made indeed was very good. So evening and morning were the first day. Notice, he created everything and saw that it was good. And you know what I noticed here? David, the psalmist, wrote in Psalm 139, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. David realized that he didn't just happen by some bomb that exploded or some unexplained happening in the past. He was fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. Life came from life. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 6. Yet for us there is one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we for Him, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things, and through whom we live. God is the source of life. Man is different because he is in the image of God. Notice in Genesis 1:27. So God created man in His own image, and the image of God created He him. Male and female, He created them. Life came from life. What life made life? God's the source of life. And He created life. Notice that. Life came from life. Everything was made by God. Here again we go to the psalmist. 102 verses 25 through 7. Of old you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will endure. Yes, they will all grow old like a garment. Like a cloak you will change them, and they will be changed. But you are the same, and your years have no end. I want you to notice, not only does David acknowledge God as the creator of all things, but he also notes God will go on and the earth won't. Interesting. Even David understood that. And of course, being a prophet of God, he had the ability. In Acts 17, I'm just really messed up good here. In Acts 17, verses 24 through 28, Paul observed God's creative power on Mars Hill. He said that God, who made the world and everything in it, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is He worshipped with men's hands as though He needed anything, since He gives life to all, breath and all things. And He has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their preappointed times, the boundaries of their dwellings, so they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us. For in Him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are His offspring. Notice the immensity of this proposition. We live and move and have our being in God. He's not only the source, but He is the sustainer of creation. This explanation fits everything that we know and observe about man. Notice in Hebrews 3 and 4, every house is built by someone. Now, do you understand that concept? How many of you have driven down a street and seen a house sitting on the corner and said, that house dropped out of the sky? Or that house is the result of an explosion? How many of you have done that? Well, I dare say none of you. But every house is built by someone. Now, here is the answer. And He who built all things is God. There's the answer right there. No house just happened. It was built by someone. In Romans, the first chapter, I'm almost afraid to push this thing. Oh, Romans, the second chapter, well, that's supposed to be the first chapter. Mark that down on your notes. Romans 1:18 through 21. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifested in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because they knew God and did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Notice that. What may be known of God was manifest to these people. And they refused to know him. And they refused to glorify him as God. No longer did they credit God with these things, but they thought they got it. I don't need God. Look at what I can provide for myself. And no longer were they dependent on God, but they became fools. And that was a pretty good description of the Gentiles in the time that Paul wrote this. Now, what about the purpose of creation? Well, to sum it up, we might say, first of all, it belongs to God. The creation belongs to God. And we might look at Ezekiel 18:4 for an example of this. Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father as well as the soul of the Son is mine, and the soul whose sin shall die. God owns even our spirit. It belongs to him. It was made for him. Now look at this. Colossians 1 and verse 16. For by him all things were created that are in the heaven and that are on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and by him. And he is before all things. And in him all things consist. Now, get this picture. He is before all things in that he existed before the beginning. And in him all things consist. In other words, it keeps going and going and going because he sustains it. If he took his power away from it, it would just collapse. Now that's what that says. Romans 11, verse 36. For of him and through him and to him are all things. Did you get that? Of him, through him, and to him are all things. To whom be the glory forever. Amen. I don't know if you've ever thought about this or not. But even the wicked still belong to God. Yeah, that's right. Look at Proverbs 16. The Lord has made all for himself, yes, even the wicked for the day of doom. God made them. And they're accountable to God. Nothing exists without him. John 1, verses 1 through 3. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made. Now, nothing doesn't leave room for anything. Doesn't leave room for anything. But this is real important. It is by his choice that we are saved. Did you realize that? By his choice we are saved. Look at Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 10. For it was fitting for him, for whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. Here, Jesus is pictured as the captain of our salvation. Over in Hebrews 5, verses 8 and 9, we learn that although he was a son, yet he learned obedience through the things which he suffered, and he became the author of eternal salvation. Here he's the captain of our salvation. There he's the author of eternal salvation. To whom? To all those who obey him. Very interesting indeed. But that brings us to the final part of our lesson this morning. And that is, what does God require of us? Now, this is where people get a little nervous. Because they may acknowledge that God is the creator and sustainer of everything, but they don't want to talk about what he requires of us. They seem to think that he made this world so we can just kind of coast along and have a good time. But that's not the thing that he requires of us. What is it that he requires of us? Well, we might say, quite simply, to serve him. To serve him. Look at Deuteronomy 6 and verse 2 with me for just a moment. That you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and commandments, which I command you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Now, that is something that we can take to heart. We are to fear the Lord. He is our God, and he deserves respect. We give service to him all the days of our life. And notice, he says, not just you, I want your son and your grandson all the days of your life. It's not a single generation. It's not just one generation. He wants every generation to be saved. That's what he wants. And those people can faithfully serve him every day of their life. Well, what else might we say about this? Well, it's implied in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and 2. But I want to home in on Ecclesiastes 12. And I want to look at verses 13 and 14. The wise man of old, under the pseudonym of the preacher, writes the following. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Now, I want to stop right there. And some versions say this is the whole duty of man. What is the duty of man? What is man's all? Let us hear the whole conclusion. Fear God and keep his commandments. Well, we talked about fearing God with the idea of reverence and service to him. But what else? Keep his commandments. What is the implication of keeping his commandments? Well, making him pleased. Because we want him to be happy with us. Well, what is the implication of not keeping his commandments? Verse 14. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. This is very similar to a statement made by Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Because he says over there, he says that he's going to cause us to come into judgment to answer for everything we've done in the body, whether good or evil. Well, what about that? Well, if I only can offer God work done in the flesh that's evil, I can't expect for Him to cause me to enter into heaven when the life is through. But if I work that which is good in His sight, I can expect it. Now, someone says, well, it sounds to me like that God put us on this earth and gave us all this stuff around here. And then He set up these laws that we are to keep, these laws, just to make us miserable. Yeah. I've heard people say that. Just to make us miserable. Well, I don't believe that's the case. I believe that He gave us these commandments as a blessing to us, because they are meant to guide our lives in a way that will be pleasing unto Him and result in a home in heaven when this life is through. Read carefully with me 1 John in verse 5 and verse 3. Chapter 5, verse 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. Why do we keep the commandments of God? Because we love Him. Why do we love Him? Because He created everything. What's not to love? Now, look at this. His commandments are not burdensome. Now, there it is. Plain, simple language. His commandments are not burdensome. Someone says, well, why do they seem to be that way? Why do the commandments seem to be burdensome? I'll tell you why. The flesh doesn't want to give in to it. The flesh keeps crying out, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this, I want to do that. And thus, because we listen to the flesh instead of paying attention to the Spirit, it becomes burdensome to keep these commandments. That's the answer. So if the commandments seem burdensome to you, you need to sit back and say, whoa, what's happening here? Why is it so difficult? Well, you're letting the flesh get a hold of you. That's right. Paul says we can't do that. In Romans, he says we have to live by the Spirit and not the flesh. If we live by the Spirit, we'll keep His commandments, and we'll understand the meaning of this phrase, and His commandments are not burdensome. I leave the lesson with you for today. Our next lesson, are you ready for this one? Will be the meaning of life. Why are you here? Well, that's a good question. Why am I here? And this will have somewhat to say about what our obligations are as a result of being here as well. I appreciate your careful attention this morning and invite you, of course, to be back next week and to hear the next lesson. I don't intend to drag this on. It's only going to go 3 lessons, I think. Notice I think. But I believe that there are lessons that will be beneficial to you and informative to you.